Ladies and gentlemen, you know what that sound means. It means it's episode 196 of the Personal Arrogance Podcast, brought to you by the Bald Move Network. I am one of your hosts. My name is Eric Wahlquist, and joining me this week, as he does each and every week, is the other host of the show. His name is...
I'm Jesse the Burger Smith Wilson.
Burger Smith.
I made what very well could have been my best burger ever tonight.
Mm.
Very, very excited with how that turned out.
You know, it's funny because you could be calling yourself a burger chef here, and Burger Chef has been, used to be a restaurant called Burger Chef, and it has been a very prominent thing on this season of Bald Move, of Mad Men. I'm a little Mad Men crazy right now. Shout out to my Mad Men happy hour homies.
I am the Burger Smith. I also have a wailing daughter on the other side of this door that's making it kind of hard to concentrate.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Don't be. Okay. But yeah, I made a delicious hamburger.
Nicely done. What, any special ingredients?
Say what?
Any special ingredients?
Well, this time what I did is I cooked up two slices of bacon. I made like three patties with this. I cooked up two slices of bacon beforehand, then diced it up into little bacon chunks.
Oh, and shit.
Threw that into the patty in the mixing bowl and mixed it together with like some, minced garlic and pepper, and then some shredded cheese went in there too, and then all that became the patties.
You have almost made one of my favorite fast food things of all time.
What's that?
The bacon cheeseburger from Jack in the Box.
It's very much like the bacon theme.
The bacon cheeseburger was something that got me through a lot of hangovers in college. That thing is like pure sodium and delicious.
It's back to the electrolytes, baby.
Exactly, man. We're going to Gatorade this shit up through burgers.
Yeah. Screw burgers. Screw Gatorade.
Yeah. So I had a very interesting weekend. I went to Bend, Oregon this past weekend.
Oh, snap. I totally forgot about that.
The beer mecca of the Northwest.
Tell me how that went.
It was really cool. I mean, we did the brewery stuff. So we only hit up like five breweries, I think. But we did.
You didn't ale trail?
Well, no, because you got to drive it, basically.
There are some that are not, like, walking distance.
Yeah. Like, but we did Deschutes, of course. We did 10 Barrel.
Did you do the Deschutes Brew Pub downtown, or did you do the actual production facility?
We did the Brew Pub because the production facility wasn't open when we were available. Oh.
Yeah, I just did the Brew Pub as well. But they have a small house system there. Yeah.
No, it was wonderful, and they had... I love it when you go to established breweries because they always have like only stuff that's on tap, like stuff you can't get in bottles. And one thing that I wanted to talk about, because we've had this before, this discussion a few times before, is lagers, right? Some people just don't like lagers.
And yeah, I would say, that's a misconception in the craft community.
Well, I think that a lot of people associate lagers with like Budweiser.
Right.
But I think that if people want to get into lagers, I would really... suggest trying Dunkelweizens, which are basically like dark lagers, like double lagers. And it's one of my favorite types of beers, Dunkelweizen. I love the Celebrator. I love the Spatenoptimator. And they had a Dunkelweizen on tap from Deschutes called Trees of Doom, which was just really, really good. So I had a couple glasses of that and I took a growler of it back to the campsite.
Nice.
But Dunkelweizens, I would just really suggest. So we had Deschutes, we had 10 Barrel, we had Good Life, which was probably my favorite brewery.
That's my favorite.
It was so good. Not to mention...
hence the name.
Yeah, plus they have like an awesome lawn with like bocce ball.
Wonderful. They got a really cool facility. And if you look inside, it's freaking gigantic. Yeah, and their equipment only takes up maybe a quarter of the space that they have. Like, they are prepped for expansion.
Well, I think they're expanding a little bit because they had a fermentation tank outside with like a tube. So maybe they're expanding a little more, but and then we hit up a couple more, but it was a wonderful weekend. I got to go into a cave, which was awesome.
You know, I've never done any caving.
It was amazing. Like, they had this thing right off the highway. It was called Lava Caves. And I was like, okay, they're probably like lava tubes. Like, they're probably like these little tubes you walk through. We get there and they're like, do you have a lantern? We're like, no. And they're like, okay, you need to rent a lantern. So we had to rent a lantern for $5. It was like an old Coleman lantern that you like light on fire, basically.
Right. Yeah, I know the type.
And then you go down into the cave, and the cave is like a mile deep, and you go about 200 feet underground when you're in it. So it's like this crazy lava tube, and all I could think was like, I want to go 3/4 of the way through this thing, post up a bunch of camp chairs, and do a D&D session.
Oh, that would be spooktacular.
It was a little spooky, but it was awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah. So anyway, really wonderful weekend. If anybody has the opportunity to go to Bend, Oregon, I highly recommend it. It is a very relaxing and wonderful, beautiful place.
Yeah, it's a cool town. I liked it a lot when I was there last year.
It was bigger than I thought it would be.
It's fairly big.
Yeah, 90,000 people.
Wow.
Anyway, enough about my weekend. We also need to talk about PAX tickets, because they went on sale today.
Right.
Pretty interesting experience.
Do tell.
So anyway, I was able to procure some PAX tickets for Jesse and Levi, so no harm done here with the system. I still think the system is really good for PAX. Because
there was a lot of lamentations in my Facebook feed.
Yeah, there are. I mean, but the fact of the matter is you gotta be on top of your shit. That's just it's so popular that you have to be on top of your shit. And being on top of your shit this year meant you had to get in like the first 5 minutes.
Right.
So last year PAX sold out in 6 hours. This year PAX sold out in 1 hour. The entire thing sold out in 1 hour. And Saturday badges sold out in about 45 minutes, but from everything I've read online and on Reddit, you basically have to be into the queue within the first couple minutes in order to get those Saturday passes in 45 minutes. But I had my system. I had the text alert set up. I got the text. I jumped on. I was in within 30 seconds. I was into the ticket buying thing within 6 minutes, and I was able to get the one-day passes. So everything's gravy on my end. All I'm saying is you got to get on top of your stuff if you want to be a part of it. It was very exciting, though. It's kind of like having a baby, because it's like, you know, it's probably exactly like having a baby. You know what I'm talking about.
It's probably more intense.
It's probably really is. Like
do you have your go bag?
Yeah, exactly.
All packed and ready.
Yeah, you have your go bag. Like, I had my browser windows all ready to go.
Just like having a baby.
I had my route planned. Like, I was like, okay, I get the text. I go to official PAX on Twitter, follow the link immediately. Like, I had it all planned out. And yeah, it was kind of exciting. Like, I was a little jumpy. I texted everybody. I was like very excited. But yeah, we're all in, and we'll be at PAX. So if anybody else is out there going to PAX, guys, please let us know. We'd love to hang out and have a beer. I'm so excited. 92 days away. So.
Wow.
Whew.
And there's just over 100 days until NFL.
Holy crud. The NFL season
crap.
Opens in Seattle versus Green Bay.
I know. That's going to be a good game.
Very excited. All right. Well, we got to get some listener feedback this week. We got a bunch of phone calls. But the first thing we got was just something amazing. And, Jesse, I don't know if you're going to cover this, but we got a new bracket.
No, I wasn't planning on it. We could make it a segment, though.
Well, this bracket is really wonderful, but I think that it might be a little too hard to do a segment out of.
Okay.
The thing is here, James Patterson is a king amongst men. He is the brain behind all of our bracketology on the show. He did the Wilson bracket. He did the Eric bracket. He did the breakfast bracket, which was one of our most popular segments ever on Personal Arrogance.
And controversial.
And very controversial. People are still up in arms about cold pizza beating out pancakes. But yeah, he put together this Levi bracket. The most valiant effort I've ever seen. I'm just not sure if, through all of his amazing effort here, I don't know, because it's so obscure. We gave him such a hard task. He stepped up to the challenge, but I think that the outcomes are just too difficult to debate. But let me just run through it here. So we have a Rocky Mountain correspondent, Levi Jetty, is a one seed versus Levi Stubbs, lead singer for the Four Tops.
I don't know what that is.
We have Levi Coffin, abolitionist, president of the Underground Railroad, awesome name haver.
Yeah, great one.
Versus Levi Solario, Filipino composer in the Guinness Book of World Records for leaf playing.
Again, don't know what that is.
Then we have Levi Morton, vice president of the United States from 1889 to 1893, versus Levi Ponce, mural painter of Danny Trejo, Edward James Olmos, and Richie Valens.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. This one is a little bit of a stretch. It's the Chevy was driven to the levee, but which I kind of love. A little American Pie lyrics there. Versus Levi Romero, pitcher of the Fukuoka SoftBank Hawks in Japan. So pretty great there. Levi Strauss from the Jeans versus Rita Levi Moltissini, Nobel Prize winner, discoverer of protein that stimulates nerve cell growth. Levi Johnson knocked up a Palin.
Right, that's the one Levi.
Yeah.
Rocky Mountain correspondent was talking about.
I thought I misread this almost, and I almost said Putin instead of Palin.
That's coming for you next, Putin.
versus Charles Levi, bassist from My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult. Or it might be a bassist, might be a fisherman. Versus, and then we got Levi Woodbury, Supreme Court Justice, versus Levi Reakin, PA podcast aficionado. Levi, Old Testament style, versus Kid Levi's, The Edge, Matthew McConaughey, Sheryl Crow, Sarah Gilbert, and the Duggards all have kids named Levi. This is a valiant effort, James. I'm not trying to discount this by not making this a segment. I just think we put you up to too much of a task. You stepped up to the challenge, but, God, Levi's are just too weird. I think that both Levi Reakin and Rocky Mountain correspondent Levi Jetty both win the weirdness category. So,
right.
But mad props to you, James. We will have a more digestible bracket challenge out to you very soon. I promise. But let's
I think Levi Coffin wins it.
Levi Coffin, man. He's got an awesome name and he did awesome stuff.
Yeah. Hard to beat.
Hard to beat. Although, first round matchup versus Guinness World Book of Records winner for Leaf playing. I don't know, man.
What is Leaf playing?
I think it's like when you're a kid and you go camping and you take a blade of grass and you put it between your thumbs.
It cannot be that.
But it's with leaves.
It cannot be that.
I don't know. Anyway, let's get to some voicemails this week. The first one comes to us from someone we've talked about a lot in this show, none other than Mr. Rolo Tomasi.
Eric, Jesse. Aw, shit. It's Rolo Tomasi sending you guys an audio file over email, kind of like calling, but not really. Anyways, you guys were talking about raising the minimum wage last week. Thought it was an interesting debate. I was always kind of on the viewpoint of that when you raise minimum wage, the cost of living increases. And here in Ontario, where I live, our minimum wage is about $10.75 now. And even when I was working minimum wage jobs about 10 years ago, and it was still about $9. I used to lament when the minimum wage would go up because my groceries would go up and my rent would go up and it just didn't add up. Anyways, I heard something else interesting on the radio this week, and it was that in the next 5 to 6 years, they're saying most of those minimum wage jobs like retail and food services, bartending, stuff like that, it's going to go to robots and computers anyways. So the unemployment rate's going to skyrocket. One optimistic opinion was that, you know what, people aren't going to be so busy doing these sort of doer jobs, just trying to scrape by, that they'll have more time to be innovative and change the world and all sorts of great things. Well, I guess I'm a little bit more of a pessimistic asshole in the fact that I think that really people will just be unemployed and depressed and it'll create a cycle of poverty. But what do you guys think? Is it like a one step forward, two step back, get in the way of progress type thing? Or do you think that it's a step in the right direction and, you know, it's freeing up room for new types of future jobs? Maybe we can be people that dust off the computers and make minimum wage? I don't know. But anyways, love the cast. Keep doing what you're doing. Matrix, loved it in a big bad way. Didn't like the Power Rangers. Pokemon, you know it. Kung Pao Enter the Fist, great film. Watch it every year. Stars above.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry I've been talking too long. You guys rock. Keep doing what you're doing. Stay arrogant and get off my back. And can we be best friends? Because that would be cool. Anyways.
Rollo, get off my back.
My best friend is actually, you were in consideration, but they just built a new best friend robot, so.
And it's awesome. It is.
It's a way cool friend. It's
so cool.
And it can always get the lid off the pickle jar.
It does, man. it and like the cry on the shoulder app? Come on.
It only occasionally tries to smother you with a pillow because it's like, I see that you are dying. Organic life is just pain. Let me smother you.
Yeah. No, it's
interesting. That's only like twice a week.
Yeah. It's pretty easy. You just got to sleep with one eye open.
Mm-hmm.
Not a prob. Anyway.
One eye on the EMP grenade.
I feel like our whole minimum wage talk might have been a little more political than we tried to make it on this show. We usually don't get too political.
Made it fairly political.
Yeah, whatever. You self-identified as a Marxist at the beginning, so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, there's sides to everything. I think one of the things is, especially with the minimum wage proposal here in Seattle going up to $15, at least it will be a litmus test to see. And that's kind of what economists are saying. It's like, well, we'll see, because we've literally never had a $15 US dollar minimum wage basically anywhere in the world. I know they have a very high minimum wage in Australia, but when you use a conversion rate, it's actually lower than 15 American dollars. So, it'll be an interesting test to see if it works or not. And it'll happen in my city. So we'll either be, great, affluent, wonderful people, or it's going to devolve into post-apocalyptic Seattle, which I really want to play Infamous 2, so maybe I'll get to do that in real life.
Well, Seattle in the 70s was basically a post-apocalyptic Seattle.
Yeah. Last one to leave Seattle, turn out those lights.
Precisely. As for the robot thing, I love the idea of robot workers. In fact, the Safeway in town here,
yep,
I was a little bummed out because they took out one bank of the self-checkout.
Why? I love self-checkout.
They took one of them out and installed like two express checkouts, which only like one of them is being operated at any time anyway.
Classic
for
Pinko
one thing,
Port
Townsend.
There's
way too many checkouts.
Yeah.
There's always like 50% of the checkouts aren't even open.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we need more checkouts. We need more of the do-it-yourself stuff.
I love the do-it-yourself checkout.
But, I mean, there's an interesting philosophical question posed here. Like, imagine, what if all the jobs, what if graphic designers and brewers and not just like minimum wage laborer jobs, but all sorts of jobs were being done by humans. And essentially, no one had to work. We have like a self-sustaining robotic economy on Earth, and we as humans are free to like do as we please because everything is provided to us. Do we still have like social stratum? Do we still have class? Are there people who... Well, I own the robot, so I get all the money.
Right.
And you don't own any robots, so you don't get any money.
Yeah.
Like, how does that work when we progress the society like that?
Well, I mean, I feel like the haves and have-nots would be very separated in that scenario.
Yeah, unless, you know, it isn't. Unless all the robots belong to the government, and the people control the government, and then everyone just gets a check in the mail.
Well, you could just move to Alaska, sir. I don't know. I mean, many a sci-fi novel has been written off this premise.
Right.
But yeah, it's a really interesting thing to think about it. And the crazy thing about it is that we are pretty close to realizing that world.
We might be getting a little bit closer in one of my topics this week.
All right. Well, let's save it for that. We got a couple more voicemails. This one comes to us from our good buddy, Rob Zip, down in Houston, Texas, and here it is.
Hey, Eric and Jesse, this is your good friend Rob Zip down in Houston. I was on a podcast panel at Comic Palooza on Saturday, and someone asked me what podcast you listen to, and definitely gave Personal Arrogance a big shout out. So I could talk about beer, board games, and other weird shit. They're funny guys. So I just wanted to like, give you guys a heads up if you got like a plethora of new listeners and Facebook friends and whatnot. So, anyway, I'm going to drink a beer at 3 or 4 for you guys. And if I want to stay here again, love you.
Love you too, Rob. Get off my back. Love Rob Zip, dude. Can't help but love him. He's got that Texas charm.
Mm-hmm. And he's plugging our podcast.
Yeah.
Texas Comic Paloozas.
Love it.
Which is awesome.
Can't get enough of it. Thank you, Rob. I really appreciate that. And then we got one more from across the pond. We got a new British listener. Here he is.
It's Rory from the UK. I'm a university student at Reading doing archaeology. Just thought I'd ring in. First time listener, long time listener, first time caller. Really enjoy your podcast, all the stuff you talk about. I've actually started getting into board games. Played Risk a couple of times over the last couple of weeks. I bought Settlers of Catan. That should arrive soon. Looking forward to playing that. I'm in the middle of my first year exams at university now. I've actually got two exams tomorrow. I was just listening to some of your podcasts, relaxing a bit before my exams. Yeah, and keep up the good work and stay off my back.
You stay off my back. This is so great, dude. I love the British listeners.
I have mixed feelings about this.
Well, because you're an Australian citizen, sir.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is...
And American.
And... yeah, frankly, you've been oppressed and rebelled.
Yeah.
No, I love these British listeners, man. It just makes my day. Ollie James, Sam Gulmahmadi. I can't get enough of these guys. So
sure, we got like a good three who are, you know, active participants at this point.
Exactly. And
that's
and not
wild.
And that's only in Great Britain proper. We've also got Ireland, we've got Germany. We're taking over Europe, man. Speaking of Risk. I'm going to get those 5 sweet victory points.
By the way, you're going to stop playing Risk as soon as you start playing Settlers.
Yeah. And it's great. We're expanding horizons too here. So, you know, we can't talk about it enough. If we talk about board games on here all the time, if you need an intro board game, the universal intro board game to enter this world of designer board games is Settlers of Catan. I can't recommend it enough. Settlers of Catan. And right. If you want to give us a call, please do so. 360-362-0024. Our promise to you is that if you give us a call, we will put it on this show.
Bam.
So there you go. It's time for a little Tiny Matt roll-off. We're going to get this show on the road, see who gets to speak first on the podcast. Going to be a roll of a 20-sided die, and here we go. What'd you get?
Mighty 11.
I got an 11 as well.
Double
roll offs! So many double roll offs, guys. So many double roll offs. Here we go. What'd you get?
5.
Ah, oh, I got a 10.
Ah, oh, dang.
Oh, man. I wanted it. All right. Well, my first topic this week has to do with, surprise, games.
Here we go.
So, Jesse, I heard about this amazing new game this week. It's called a Mega Game. Have you heard of Mega Games?
I've heard of Mega Man.
That's true. So, this is nothing like that. But what Mega Games are basically these games that are created by this group of people in England called Mega Game Makers. Apparently, for the past 30 years, they've been perfecting these Mega Games. And basically what they are games that basically like 45 people will play for like 3 hours. And the way that I heard about this is through a podcast and in channel that I frequent, Shut Up and Sit Down. I've talked about them on the show before. They mostly review board games. But in their most recent video that they posted, it's a 45-minute long video talking about the Mega Game session that they recently attended. And basically what this Mega Game session was is that every team, you have like teams of 4 people, every team represents a country. And within each team, you delegate roles. So there's like the prime minister of the country. There's the foreign minister of the country. There's the defense minister of the country. And then there's the scientist for the country. And each person has a different role and they have to perform different tasks on each turn. And so each of these people were representing country. The Shut Up and Sit Down guys were from Japan, but they had representatives from Russia, from the US, from France, from China. And so they're trying to do all these diplomatic relations because an event has occurred. Aliens have landed on Earth. And so there are also people that are playing the alien civilization. And it all takes place in like this giant gym. And so, like, there's this black curtain that only the aliens can go behind. And then there's, like, the United Nations. So the foreign minister goes to the United Nations. There's, like, impromptu meetings called by world leaders that you, like, get together. You have to form alliances and figure out how you're going to handle this alien threat while also handling the diplomacy of world powers interacting with each other. So it was like this. It was like a super, super interesting thing. So it's a lot of role playing, but there's also dice rolling mechanics that are applied with it. And God, it just got my wheels turning. Like, for instance, you know, Japan, all of the governments basically found out that aliens had landed in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's like this person who is the press. And so you can go and talk to this person. You can send her press releases, and she'll write them up in little a newspaper, basically, like a one-page newspaper. And she prints it out at the beginning of every turn and then gives it to every country. So she represents the press. So you can, like, manipulate the press.
That seems pretty powerful position.
Yeah, but she's, like, one of the game makers.
Oh, okay.
So there are game makers who go around and make sure that everything's running correctly.
Right.
While, like, all of the military leaders are surrounding a table and moving military troops around the world, and making decisive military things. But while a president goes and talks to the press and says, you know, one thing. So, like, the aliens all landed, and every country basically decided that they weren't going to acknowledge that aliens landed. And then the shut up and sit down guys from Japan were like, fuck that, we're going to say that aliens landed, which, like, threw a huge wrench in, like, everything. There's, like, a terror track for the world. So, like, the terror track is moving up because aliens are now landing. And, like, it turned into this huge diplomacy battle because they found an alien base on the moon. They found an alien base on Mars. So they decided they were going to shoot it with a nuke. And, like, all of this stuff happened.
I like how they immediately just become, like, the government from X-Files. Mm-hmm. Like, cover it up, hit them with nukes.
Well, it was interesting because, like, the United States had a lot of... They're very diplomatically tied to Japan because they have a defense pact with Japan. So they had all of this information. They had captured an alien, but they were also, like, really in with the aliens. They had, like, created diplomatic ties with the aliens, and then they were pushing out counterintelligence, basically, through the press that Japan was actually working with the aliens. So all of the foreign governments thought that Japan was working with the aliens when really the U.S. was.
Right.
So all of this puppet mechanics, like, it was just really, really interesting. And then at the end of the day, it turned out that the aliens had just come to Earth to see if Earth was mature enough to join a galactic council.
Right, of course. Like, that's why you don't nuke the aliens.
Yeah, exactly. So then the aliens were like, well, fuck that. You guys are going to blow us up. So they, like, shot. They're, like, out of town. You don't get to join the galactic council.
Right.
Just, like, an amazing thing. Like, I really want to do it. Like, and unfortunately, this group is only in England, but they do this sort of thing. They've done World War One simulations. They've done World War Two simulations.
Man. That'd be so fun.
Yeah, where you, like, all represent a country. You're like Austria-Hungary in World War One.
Right.
Like, so cool. Oh, man, the nerd cred is rising, I think. But what I was thinking is, like, they have a bunch of rules online, so I really want to start working on a mega game, because apparently the only place you could play these things is in England at this point.
But are the rule sets are all available?
The rule sets, not all of them are available, but a good amount of them are available at Mega Game Makers. If you just type that into Google, it's, like, the first thing that pops up. So one of them that they had was a Battle of North Africa, 1943-45 or something.
Oh, classic.
Yeah. So, and you each...
Dibs on Montgomery, am I right, guys?
Well, they had, like, it was all broken down by battalions. So you had, like, the air defense force, the ground defense force for each side. And it was, like, so very militaristically based. But it got my brain a-turning because what I was, like, I feel like the most amazing thing would be if there was a border states version of this game surrounded around a theme of the American Civil War. So, like...
Like Bleeding Kansas.
Yeah, exactly. Like everybody is a state, and you have the governor, the senator, the congressman, and the general from each state. And like the Confederacy is happening. So you're not gonna have like Florida, because obviously the Florida's gonna be a part of the South. And you don't have like Maine, because Maine's obviously gonna be a part of the North.
Right.
But you have like all of the border states, and you have to form a Confederacy, elect a president, and then fight the Civil War. But at the same time, there is a group of people playing the executive branch as well, trying to. So they get, the North gets a little bit of a head start because they have an executive branch, but then the South forms an executive branch. And the great thing is, it's a game that's played with like 20 to 30 people. It's just like the, it just really made me very, very excited.
Now that'd be a lot of fun. This is, it's almost like LARPing meets like, the mock UN.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's almost exactly that, actually.
Is that good or bad? Who knows?
Well, the question is that I've shied away from, LARPing is a dirty word in the nerd world. Like, if you're a LARPer, you're at the fringes. You're the tea party of the nerd world. maybe you're gonna take over the Congress, but I don't know. But yeah, like, LARPing is a bit of a dirty word in the nerd world. Do you think that this is LARPing? Because it seems kind of like LARPing.
Yeah, it's totally LARPing.
But it's like cool LARPing.
No, no, it's not. Don't get that impression.
This was my problem in high school. It's like I was a nerd, but I thought I was like a cool nerd.
Yeah, no, this is not cool at all.
Tell that to the 45-year-old guy who was playing the Prime Minister of Russia.
You know what I want to do? For one of these mega games.
Yeah.
So you get all the hard stats off of, like, Pro Football Focus or whatever for NFL teams. Mm-hmm. Everyone plays a position and then takes certain actions and rolls the dice to see if it works or not. And you have to, like, call a play and then, like, depending on different coverage schemes, you have, like, a percentile chance and you roll the D100 to see if the pass is complete.
Oh, man.
Then you could coach an actual game as though it's actual NFL players, but no one has to be able to play NFL.
I like it. I feel like playing a whole season might take a long time.
I'm not suggesting you play a whole season.
Where I thought you were going with this was draft day. Like, you each play an NFL front office, and then you have to, like, draft the best draft class.
No, you play as a player.
Yeah.
Like, one person's quarterback, one person's receiver, you got one person for every lineman, and then, like, you take an action, it's like, I'm going to attempt to block this defensive lineman, and based off of the statistics, like, I am, you know,
yeah,
Bruno Giacomini, and you are J.J. Watt, so you find the stats for that percentage on that matchup, roll the die.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to be able to play football without having to be able to play football.
But playing football is fun.
No, it is fun.
It's really fun. I think that there's something here, though, with like playing a sports front office and like figuring out how to put a winning team together and like formulating trades. And oh my God, this would be like the coolest thing.
No, it's not cool.
It would be really cool.
Stop
for me.
Suggesting that this is cool.
I mean, it would be neat.
Okay.
It would be neat. It may not be cool, but it's definitely neat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I'm so excited.
I like the war stuff way more.
Yeah, I mean, this is right up your alley, dude. Mm-hmm. This is, like, super up. And I would love to play a mega game with you. Like,
yeah. It would be fun if we went, especially, like, if we went and played it in England.
Yeah.
And it's the World War I one, and we play the Doughboys.
I love it.
Oh, man.
No, I mean,
bring in our Kentucky swagger.
That would just be wonderful if we could have a game where we came in and we were the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in England.
And then there's the Americans.
Yeah.
I'd love to see, like, the meek British nerd trying to play, you know, President Wilson. No.
I love it. And, like, you know, the shut up and sit down guys, like, got kind of into it. Like, they had uniforms. Like, they wore, like, suits.
Oh, man, I would get so into it.
The Americans had...
We already have matching suits.
Yeah, that's true, we do. We have two sets. Thank you, weddings. No, and the... Oh, my God, if we all wear the same suit, that would be ridiculous.
It'd be really fun to try and organize something like this during PAX. Maybe not this year, but the following.
Well, and I do kind of want to take certain elements of this and incorporate it into the HP PubCraft Love
Club. Oh, man. I've been thinking about that lately.
If you have any suggestions, I need to start getting that together hardcore. I'm ready to delve right into it. But I think one other thing is, since we're doing teams, doing something with adventuring parties together, certain people getting information at certain times, other people being able to use information to get leverage, that sort of thing. Like, that kind of intrigue is so great, and I think that that could really add a nice saucy bent to the pub crawl, but I also don't want to make it too hardcore because it is a drinking event.
Right.
Yeah. So, anyway, Mega Games are awesome. If you haven't already, please check out Shut Up and Sit Down. They have a podcast and a video about this. And if you have any ideas, dude, please send them our way. I want to put something like this together. And I feel like we could probably do it, especially around something like PAX. And the buzz is hard right now, so. I think.
So you're drunk, or?
Yeah. The other thing, like I was thinking, the Space Race. Like, I think that could be really cool. Something around Space Race. Anyway,
yeah, guys. The International Space Station.
Yeah. And like, or like modern space race and then aliens come or I don't know. Something cool. Jesse, what's your first topo?
Okay. Mine doesn't fit into a neat category, but Eric, I want to ask, are we in a new era of advertisement?
Deeny, 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 deeny. Deeny advertisement.
So you are drunk then.
Yep.
To promote Eric, it's Smokehouse Brisket Sandwich. I don't know if you heard about this. Arby's filmed a brisket being smoked for 13 hours and aired it as an uncut commercial with no dialogue over the weekend.
What they put on Twitch TV?
Twitch they plays did brisket. It, but better. So, according to the New York Times, the ad was aired on a single station in Duluth, Minnesota.
Oh, my God.
It featured a really long shot of a seasoned brisket being cooked in a smoker, fitted with a glass window and an internal light at a smokehouse in Texas that actually cooks the chance brisket.
So, TV is dead, basically, is what you're saying.
Or, Eric, it got a whole lot better. They just had the courage to show 13 hours of a brisket being cooked, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, they had the courage, a.k.a. they got paid.
Well, I mean, Arby's had the courage.
Yeah, okay.
Speaking of getting paid, it cost them about $250,000. Mm. And it set a Guinness World Record, not for leaf playing, but for longest television commercial ever.
Oh, I love it. I want more.
The Arby's brand president noted, if there was ever a doubt that we actually pit smoke our brisket for 13 hours over real hickory wood, this ad makes it pretty mouth-wateringly clear that we do.
You got it, brother.
So I'm pretty excited about that. I hope they put it on YouTube. This brisket.
Yeah, I hope they put this on YouTube. I'm ready to watch it.
I think that this should, maybe it could. They could incorporate this. Taco Bell's doing all sorts of cool new things with their menu.
Yeah.
The item I've always wanted is briskets and gravy.
I love it. Breakfast and dinner.
Yeah, this could be the new Arby's first meal menu. Step one, briskets and gravy. Step two, I don't know, make a fucking breakfast burrito out of sliced beef.
Sliced beef and bacon, baby.
That seems to be all they're doing with the first meal stuff.
Well, the classic sandwiches at Arby's, man. That was a...
good or bad?
Vice of mine for a very long time.
Oh, yeah. Because they were affordable, too.
Yeah, the breakfast... The lunch sandwiches are ill-affordable. They're like $12 for a sandwich and fries. But they are insane. Delicious. And they don't use mayonnaise. They use salad dressing, basically. Fuck mayonnaise. Salad dressing, dudes. Salad dressing.
Yeah. Well, do you think that, you know, maybe we're going to get some other ballsy ad campaigns?
I love the idea here. This is what I'm saying. Like, why isn't there a long-form TV channel? Like, Monday, brisket. Tuesday, Game of Axis and Allies.
Yes. Speaking of which, I played one the weekend.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It actually went pretty fast. Japan got it spanked.
How was it? Full Access and Allies or Access and Allies specific?
It was the 1986 version.
Jesus.
So we went old school for
That's
it.
Hardcore.
Well, actually, that game's a lot easier than the newer iterations.
Hmm.
It, like, the original version of Axis and Allies, which apparently this is where this conversation is going.
Yeah.
Is my breakdown of Axis and Allies editions. The original one, you got, like, we'll talk about the Navy. You have battleship, transport, aircraft carrier, and submarine.
Okay.
In the new one, you also have, like, cruisers and destroyers. And you also have, like, artillery. You just have a ton more different pieces.
Huh.
So, like, the old school... And I feel like there's more of them in the board in the new edition. The old version is, like, kind of, like, skeletal.
I like which it.
Which makes it easy to play and fast.
Gritty plastic.
Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
So, yeah, that's Tuesday. Wednesday, cricket.
I would watch that.
Yeah. Cricket. Thursday, turkey? No, turkey's too short.
No, the nation of Turkey.
The nation, live stream of Istanbul.
Yeah.
Friday crockpot view. Crockpot vision. Thank God it's TGIC. Thank God it's crockpot.
TGICP.
Mm-hmm.
Also, another thing I did, it's funny that you mentioned this. I cooked I watched my neighbor. I was hanging out with them. Well, they cooked a bird in deep fat oil, like deep fat fried chicken.
Cool, man.
It was awesome.
Yeah, Saturday watching beer ferment.
Well, that's just fascinating.
Yeast doing their thing.
Yeast unleashed.
Yeast unleashed. Real yeast of Port Townsend County. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm
pretty excited about this. Have you seen the commercial where the guy for... This it's the Arby's commercial.
Mm-hmm.
It's airing on TV right now.
Yeah.
And Tasha and I were fascinated by it for a long time. For one thing, they introduce this guy, but they don't say like what he's done.
Uh-huh.
And then like after like the third or fourth viewing,
mm-hmm.
in the bottom corner it said legendary detective.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. He
like
goes
a
around
guy.
Yeah, and he like hands meat slicers to people through the drive-thru window.
And Tasha and I like looked him up to see what the hell he had done. He's like PI or whatever.
Is he like tied to Jimmy Hoffa or something?
I'm not sure. Uh-huh. Apparently I wasn't paying too close attention during my research. But at one point in the latest iteration of these commercials, he says something that's like, it's a real munchitation situation. And I've watched this commercial probably 50 times, just like, what the hell is he saying? Munchitation situation? I don't know what he says.
It's a munchination situation, man.
It's a very munchitation situation.
It speaks for itself.
The other guy laughs, but he does, if you look at the guy he's talking to laughing, it's sort of like that awkward, like, what the hell, laugh? But like, I'm just going to go for it, because you rhymed, so I think it was a joke.
Yeah, it's most of the laughs that you give me on this show.
That's not true.
You literally did that laugh when I said that joke.
Every podcast with you, Eric, is a very munchitatious situation. What does he say? Maybe the listeners out there know what I'm talking about.
Oh, man,
please let me know, because I've been racking my brain trying to figure out.
Is it munchination or munchitation?
I think it's munchitatious. But it definitely shouldn't have been included in the final cut.
Well.
They play it a lot during the Bar Rescue Marathons I watch every Sunday.
You know, you gotta give a little bit of a leash, you know, for these commercials. And sometimes he comes up with comedy gold. Sometimes he comes up with munchination.
Munchitation situation.
Oh, man. By the way, Sunday, beard growing.
It gets real exciting around 5 o'clock.
Yeah, because he starts eating an egg salad sandwich and it gets in the beard.
Oh, man. I had a moment the other day.
Are you bearding right now?
Well, I was bearding, but I cut it down to mustache and sideburns. But I was eating a bagel with cream cheese at work. I caught myself in the mirror, and I just had a bunch of cream cheese on my mustache. It was not a good look.
Well, at least you caught yourself.
Yeah, but it was like, it was a while after I ate the bagel.
It was a while.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I'm ready for a break.
Me too, buddy. Let's do some trivia. We're going to be doing Genus 1 and Trivial Pursuit. I'm going to be rolling a six-sided die to see which category we're doing this week. And away we roll. It's a three, baby. It's history. I'm not going to do it this week, Jesse.
What?
I'm not going to do it this time. The history thing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I thought you meant you're not going to do the category.
No, I'm not going to do the history prelude, where I say that you have a degree in history.
Well, I think you just did it.
Well, come on, man. I can't have to spell this stuff out for you every time.
Man, it was a pretty munchitatious situation.
I think this is getting into the stars above territory. We're gonna need to make this much taste of the situation. Oh man, you know this is random things that like you don't know why they're funny, but they're funny.
Right,
just fucking funny. All right, Jesse, this question is for you. Who shot Lee Harvey Oswald?
That would be my man,
Jack Ruby.
Jack Ruby. I played a rogue sorcerer in a D&D campaign once. I named Ruby Jack after this guy.
Wow, that's hardcore, man. I was going to make a joke, but I think you're right. It's Jack Ruby. Jesus. All right, so you're up 1-0. This one's for me. Please play along at home. What U.S. president established the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis? I'm going to go with FDR.
Is that like an institution where they paralyze babies? Because that seems pretty cruel.
It's very cruel. And as we all know, FDR, cruelest president.
I think, I think it's Teddy Roosevelt, because he was like, speak softly, carry a big stick, and use it to just break the spines of children.
we don't need those jokes on this show. It's FDR. I like how they didn't put FDR, they just put Franklin Roosevelt.
Ooh, that's a classy move.
Not Delano.
Back in 83, he was just known as Franklin Roosevelt.
Franklin. Good old Franklin. All right, so it's 1-1. Jesse. Oh, we've had that one before. Jesse's question is for you. What entertainer won a defamation suit against the National Enquirer in 1981?
I'll go with Rod Stewart.
I like it. I'm going to go with John Wayne. Carol Burnett.
I barely know who that is.
She had her own show in the 70s, the Carol Burnett Show. She also played Miss Hannigan on the TV movie Annie, which aired in the early 90s, and I had on VHS because my parents taped it.
Well, there you go. That is a very much a Tasha situation.
This question's for me. What date was Black Tuesday? I'm going to go with October 14th, 1929.
Black Tuesday. I'll go with Tuesday the 14th, 31.
Oh my God, I was so close. I was 15 days off.
Oh.
October 29th, 1929.
Wow.
Jeez.
I mean, I think that warrants a point.
I don't think so. It's not a geography tiebreaker. But now it is. It's a geography tiebreaker, guys. We each got 1 point, which means that whoever is geographically closest to the answer will get the round. The question is, Jesse, you answer first. What is the easternmost U.S. state capital?
Easternmost U.S. state capital. I want to give it to the capital of Maine, which is Bangor.
You're going to give it to Bangor, Maine. I'm going to give it to Portland, Maine.
Uh-oh.
Although I think Bangor is the capital. Oh, God damn it. It's Augusta, Georgia. Oh,
well, who's closer now?
I got to do a Google search.
Because we were both wrong.
We were both very wrong. Augusta, Georgia. So Portland's
first,
Maine.
What is the capital of Maine?
That's irrelevant.
I know, but just out of curiosity. You look it up, I'll look up what the capital of Maine is.
Bangor, Maine is an hour and 58 minutes north of Portland, Maine, which means Eric won everything this week.
Well, there you go. Augusta. Yeah. Augusta, capital of Maine.
Oh, wait. Augusta. Okay. Okay, we screwed this up, man. I thought Augusta was the capital of Georgia because I'm a dum-dum. So, so Portland, Maine is literally like right between Augusta, Maine and Portland.
Wait, I'm confused.
I'm sorry. Augusta, Maine is right between Bangor, Maine and Portland, Maine.
Mm.
Oh, man.
What's the correct answer?
Okay, just one second. To Augusta, Maine. I am a dum-dum.
Is Augusta, Maine the correct answer?
Augusta, Maine is the correct answer.
Oh.
So we both had the state right. So Portland, Maine is 54 minutes from Augusta, Maine. And Bangor, Maine is an hour and 13 minutes from Augusta, Maine.
Damn.
Which means I beat you out by 23 minutes.
As everyone knows, in the United States, that's how we measure distance.
Miles per hour, motherfucker. All right. I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it this week.
Wow. That means you win everything.
I do. And
double
means
roll off, and we had to throw it to the judges.
Jesus. So. Pretty good. I don't have as the bird flies. I'm using Google Maps here. But that means my second topic this week is going to be movies.
Do you know what nemesis means?
Okay, Jesse, I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a glitch this week in Netflix.
Oh, no, I didn't hear.
It was a glitch, man. So apparently a recent glitch in a Netflix app is creating weird films that some people wish were real.
Oh, is it like hodgepodging?
Hodgepodging. So I got this from Us versus TH3M. Don't know what this site is, but somebody linked to it on Facebook. So one of my friends likes it. Which means it's probably pretty weird, but
that means it's been a thoroughly vetted source.
It's thoroughly vetted. But there's some pretty good ones here. So, Jesse, I just wanted to get some quick synopsis from you because we have the description of each of these shows, but we need to vet them out just a little bit for the second topic, okay? So the first one here is, it's a little bit of a Lifetime sci-fi crossover. Katie is crushed when her boyfriend inexplicably leaves her, and even more shocked when he sends her a diary kept by his enormous freshwater creatures. Which, obviously Lovecraftian look of Innsmouth.
Oh, yeah. You got Dagon written all over this.
Definitely.
So what's the guy's name?
Well, Katie is crushed.
Katie is crushed,
yeah.
Because her boyfriend.
Her boyfriend leaves her and is
more
shocked.
We'll call him Chaz.
Yeah, Chaz. Chaz then sends her a diary kept by his enormous freshwater creatures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course his crush. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
He was just their relationship was going so well.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about, they were engaged. They were planning their wedding together.
Right.
And they were looking, you know, they're trying to find the right spot. And they're going around beautiful rural Massachusetts.
Right.
You know, there's an old house here, covered bridge there. What's this manor?
Right.
Oh, this place is kind of charming, but it's a little creepy. What's this book that's laid out on the table with its worm-eaten yellow pages?
Uh-huh.
Necronomicon? Never heard of it. Chaz decides to thumb through it.
Right.
Hmm. Suddenly, his mind is possessed by the fish lord Dagon.
Got it.
And wedding's off.
Well, yeah, but he has to cancel the wedding because it's definitely a Spider-Man situation here. The people closest to you are in the most danger. So Chaz is really trying to protect Katie by cutting her off from these giant freshwater monsters. She won't have it, and unfortunately leads to both of their own demises.
Yeah, she should have read the diary more closely, I guess.
Exactly. Well, it was written in unspeakable tongue. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
All right. This is a very interesting one. It is a take on a Disney movie inspired by Victor Hugo's novel. This Disney film follows a gentle, crippled bell ringer as he faces prejudice and tries to save the eyes of individual dinosaurs. Apparently, it also stars Jason Alexander.
Oh.
That's in the
box. Well, we've casted our hunchback.
No, actually, those in the Disney world will know that Jason Alexander played the voice of a gargoyle in Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, well, sorry.
That's cool to know, Jesse.
So, what would... Totally cool.
Totally cool.
Hmm. Saving the eyes of individual dinosaurs.
I love it. I feel like there's some kind of Jurassic Uprising, Hollow Earth situation happening here.
Oh, yeah. He rung the bell too hard
right.
in Notre Dame, and it shattered the very crust of the earth, and mm-hmm. he tumbled down below to the Hollow Earth,
right,
where dinosaurs live. Because we all know that fossils are really just dinosaur graves.
Right.
Because, like, dinosaurs live on the inside of the earth.
Right.
You know, sort of like in a halo thing. They mm-hmm. can just see the earth in every direction.
Exactly.
The molten core sustains their life.
Yeah, it's like
they
die,
they get buried. Mm-hmm. Duh, they're not animals,
right?
And then we dig them up. They have actually entire natural history museums dedicated to the ancient race of humans because they've been digging up our graves.
Absolutely. And the problem with this is that there is the classic eye thief mammal stealing individual eyes of dinosaur children while they sleep. It's a classic horror tale of trying to find this pile of eyes in a dink cave.
It's like their Krampus.
Yeah, exactly. He's their Krampus. Dinosaur Krampus is stealing the eyes of baby dinosaurs, and it's up to Quasimodo to find them in Hollow Earth.
Okay.
Hook,
love it.
Line,
starring
sinker.
Jason Alexander.
Exactly. As the eye thief. All right. This one's good. It's a Star Trek one. Decades after the adventures of the Enterprise crew, Captain Jean-Luc Picard leads the new Enterprise on missions of trash-talking and deceit.
Oh! I love this.
Yes.
It's Jean-Luc, though.
It's Jean-Luc Picard, baby.
Ooh, it's so much easier if it's Kirk, but that makes it even better.
I don't know, because I feel like Patrick Stewart can still pull this off. I don't know, you know.
Yeah. So, like, after, you know, the military side of the Enterprise has been retired.
Yeah.
That's done. It's mm-hmm. no longer a warship.
Right.
They all become diplomats.
Exactly.
And they're granted diplomatic immunity. But they've got some bones to pick.
Exactly.
They've got some unfinished business with some Klingons and some Borg.
You know it.
And they're going to use their diplomatic immunity just to go really, like, talk uh-huh. some shit. They're going to get that guy who played Fez.
Yeah.
And also had the MTV show Yo Mama.
Exactly.
They're just gonna show up and challenge them to Yo Mama offs.
Yeah. Plus, what was that fighting show? Bully Beatdown? That guy's gotta be in. He's gotta be the guy.
And by that yeah. guy, I think you mean hero and American patriot, Jason Mayhem Miller. Glad I know that.
I'm just saying, I
don't
love
know the capital of Maine, but I know the host of Bully Beatdown is Jason Mayhem Miller. So that's cool.
I just love the idea that, like, all of the diplomats use their diplomatic immunity to have insult battles in alleyways in foreign planets.
Right, yeah.
And that's all the show. It's an MTV original show.
Yeah.
Diplomatic Beatdown.
Yeah, Bully Beatdown. You know, they were famous for, like, that the man on the moon planting the flag.
Yeah.
So they already have a pretty strong credential when it comes to space travel.
Love it. I got two more here. We'll quickly touch on this one just because it's a Twilight Zone reference. I love the Twilight Zone so much. Hosted by creator Rod Serling, this groundbreaking anthology series presents tales of the supernatural that are often bogged down by bureaucracy.
Well, that's basically the X-Files.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Is basically that's the X-Files.
Yeah.
All right, and then there's one more here. Director Sophie Fiennes and philosopher Slavoj Zizek's journey into the epicenter of ideology through their interpretations of a need to battle the Green Goblin.
Love it. That one speaks for itself.
It basically is Spider-Man 2. All right, Jesse, that's our Secotapo. What is your Secotapo?
I want to talk a little bit about science.
All right.
If today we're able to create a two-headed dog with six legs, is it possible that a similar creature existed thousands of years ago? And I say yes.
Great stuff.
Great stuff.
Great
stuff. The tech giant, Eric Google. Mm-hmm. Not Eric Google.
Mm-hmm. But, well, Eric Google is a tech
Google,
giant.
Yeah. Eric.
Don't Google Eric, by the way.
Okay. And also on its blog to say that it plans to test about 200 of its own two-seat self-driving cars. I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, this is right up the Robot Alley.
We've talked... Robot Alley is a great name for the next street in Port Townsend, Washington.
Robot Alley is the great name for the diplomatic smackdown battles in Star Trek.
Oh, man. I'm so stoked on this, though.
Yeah.
Quote, we've been working towards the goal of vehicles that can shoulder the entire burden of driving, the company wrote. They will take you where you want to go at the push of a button, and that's an important step towards improving road safety and transforming mobility for millions of people, end quote.
Let's do it.
The main goal of the tidy gumdrop-shaped cars isn't to push Google into the business of building cars. Duh. Instead... the company wants to develop self-driving software that will improve road safety and help people who can't drive.
Yep.
They keep pushing this, like, help people who can't drive, improve road safety, great.
Right.
But what I'm excited about is getting people to fucking be able to move.
Oh, yeah, traffic, dude.
Traffic! Yeah. Think about it. You're at a stoplight. You know, there's 10 cars in front of you. The light turns green. That person wakes up, starts rolling. The next person doesn't start rolling until they started rolling. The next person behind them doesn't start rolling until the second person started rolling. Robot cars, all of them sync together, working at once. That light turns green. The entire lane full of cars can start moving at the same instant, accelerating at the same time. It's going to be beautiful. I can't wait. It's going to save so much time and energy and manpower and fuel.
Well, not to mention the cars will talk to the streetlights so that you can have the streetlights all tuned to actual traffic. They know how many cars are three blocks away in either direction, so they can adjust to that. It's wonderful.
Everything is done so stupidly now, and humans are so... unreliable and out of it. Just everyone's out of it.
Interesting thing this week, traveling 6 hours either way to Bend, Oregon and back. One thing in Oregon, they are really good at staying to the right, except to pass.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen here.
Once you get in the I-5 corridor, baby, Western Washington, I talked to a friend who recently went on a countrywide road trip, and he said Western Washington is one of the only places where everybody only shoots for the left lane. Like, everybody, and that's one of the major things that causes traffic is unnecessary lane changes.
Right, yeah. People are all over the place over here.
Not to mention
lane action.
This dude, we stopped in Portland for lunch each way, and this dude, as we're coming out of Portland, almost straight up wrecked our entire car.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing, but, like, came up on my left, passing me on the left, as you are supposed to do, right? In the left-hand lane, and then but got about halfway up my car, and then just decided he's coming in my lane. No
blinker.
Oh,
really?
Yeah, like straight up crossed the line. Like, I had to hit the brakes and slam on the horn for him to realize that I was fucking there. I don't understand. It's not like I was in his blind spot. He literally came up behind me.
He forgot.
Yeah.
This is humans should not be trusted to drive. We're stupid monkeys. Today, actually, that's funny because today I'm leaving work. I like my work is situated on like probably the most dangerous intersection in my small town. Like I've seen multiple wrecks at that intersection since I've been working there. For some reason, I mean it's a four-way intersection,
right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to turn left, you have to yield on your green
right.
to people who are going forward through the intersection.
Right.
That's how the traffic laws work. But for some reason, because like I work in the port, so I guess people think it's like a driveway or something.
It kind of looks like a driveway.
Yeah, a tiny bit. teeny tiny bit. People are like, oh, I can just turn left.
Yeah.
And there's big signs, must yield on left turns.
Right.
And I was just driving forward through the intersection, and this lady started, like, turning right towards me. And I was like, go ahead and hit me. I don't care. I was like, you're going to be paying for it.
Yeah.
And she had to, like, swerve out of the way to avoid hitting me because she was turning left. I was going forward. Yeah. But yeah, humans are shitty drivers. Robots would rule at driving.
Robots would rule at driving because they can't, plus they can't be impaired. Robots aren't going to be checking their cell phones. Robots aren't going to be trying to deal with kids in the backseat. Like, just let it happen, baby. Come on. What is the problem? Why? I think it's a major hurdle, though, in America, is that people are like, oh, I want to drive. I want to drive my car. I'm like,
who wants to driving as a chore?
Who wants to drive their car, dude? Who wants to do that? I don't.
I want to sit. I want to watch X-Files.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I want to play Game Boy. If I could just get in my car and play Game Boy and then be at work, that would rule.
Well, I do take the bus.
Yeah, kind of there's no buses where I live.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, come on, dude. Nobody wants to drive. And, like, you can have, like, driver roads. You can have places where people can actually drive their cars. You can have tracks that people can drive on if they really want to drive. But, dude, average people... I don't need a bunch of fucking 16-year-olds out on the roads learning how to drive. I got a robot.
Okay, you say 16. I'll take 16-year-olds to the 80-year-olds that I deal with on a daily basis.
Well, either way. You know, I'm with you.
Yeah, the testing program will begin later this summer with a handful of primitive prototypes hitting the roads around Google's Mountain View headquarters. Sounds nice. That kind of sounds like an evil, like... headquarters, like a lair.
Don't care, love it.
Google Mountain View. The early builds will have manual controls for test drivers to override the car's autonomous driving system as required by current California law. But Google plans to build the bulk of the cars as fully autonomous, no steering wheel, no gas or brake pedal.
Love it.
So no override systems, which I say clear it out. More room for me to play magic cards and place my, you know, Kindle.
Yeah.
Inside will be a pair of seats with seatbelts, space for your belongings, buttons to start and stop, a screen showing where the car is going. California law is expected to allow the operation of such vehicles on public roads with a permit by the end of the year. The cars were built with safety in mind. They have sensors that eliminate blind spots and look in every direction for more than 200 yards. The top speed of the first vehicles will be limited to 25 miles per hour, which is whack.
That's super whack.
That's so stupid. It can't go over 25 miles per hour.
Once these things solve traffic, we're all going to be going 100 miles an hour wherever we want.
Yes! And they look in 360 degrees for over 200 yards. Like, it is impossible for the human to do that.
Exactly.
It's safe. It's infinitely more safe than even the safest human.
Right.
So they say two key obstacles stand in the way. Costs and legislation. So apparently truly autonomous cars could cost $7,000 to $10,000 more than their manual counterparts.
Mm-hmm. Turn them into taxis, pays for itself.
Right, when they hit the market in 2020, and probably will be available only as luxury models to begin with, which is kind of weird.
That's whack.
I want the economy one, please.
Come on,
and
Honda,
U.S. laws have a lot of catching up to do. Currently, only 4 states allow autonomous vehicles, California, Nevada, Michigan, and Florida.
Dude, do you know Washington's going to jump on that shit?
Washington, Colorado.
You're
going to
be
up there for the old spleef mobiles.
You're going to be smoking a blood, riding around an autonomous car while getting gay married. It's going to be the best thing ever.
That's the thing, though. Those that do allow it require a licensed, sober driver to be in the driver's seat at all times, ready and willing to assume control of the vehicle. And that's why I'm excited for are the ones that you can't manually override.
Yeah, Washington's going to be on top of that shit. You know it.
Yeah.
You can't legalize weed and not have sober drivers in autonomous cars. Come on.
That's just true. It's a hot box.
It's a hot box. Hot box on wheels, baby.
The
Hot Wheels. The Hot Wheels weed tour. Green tour in Seattle.
Yeah, man. I just think this could be the greatest thing to happen to us in our generation.
Dude, I feel like if these things actually are released in 2020, like, come on, dude. Like, so much better for everyone.
You know what I think they should do?
They go pick your kids up from school. They drive your 80-year-old grandma mm-hmm. around.
They allow you
to go out to the clubs at night and have fun. They allow you to do work on your way to work or play DS on the way to work.
Right.
Like, they allow you to take a 6-hour road trip and watch a movie on the way instead of almost getting into an accident.
Nice.
Yes.
Plus, like fatigue drivers are the most dangerous thing ever.
Right.
Like, people who have road exhaustion, so eliminate that completely. So I got two things. One thing, taxi services would become so much cheaper. Honestly, I could see a future where the average American doesn't own an automobile.
Yeah.
Because an entrepreneur could buy a fleet of these self-driving cars.
Yep.
You would just need some sort of security system to make sure people don't fuck them up.
Well, you just have an app. I mean, it's car to go, but without the driving.
Right, and you could just, you know, hit it, they'll be like, we'll be there in 7 minutes,
yep.
And then you get in, you get out, and imagine a taxi service where you don't have to pay for a fleet of drivers.
Exactly.
You don't have to pay them that $15 minimum wage.
Well, I mean, it's crazy, because, like, I mean, one thing is the taxis are going to be super gross, because a lot of people are going to be having sex in these things.
There's got to be, like, some sort of camera.
Yeah, you're on
camera. You just got to hire one guy with, like, a bank of cameras, and then there's, like, an automatic, like, mace. Like, this hand comes down with a Mickey Mouse glove.
It's like a spray bottle you use on dogs. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Squirt it.
Bring it up. I will mace you.
Or, actually, they could just have, like, a UV sanitizer every time you get in and out of the car.
Right, they have, like, those future toilets that they have.
Exactly.
But here's what I think they should do to really win over popular opinion for this.
Okay.
We had Watson on Jeopardy.
Yeah.
We need robot car in NASCAR.
Love it.
We need a self-driving car that can win NASCAR.
Dude, I don't like Watson for Jeopardy. I thought you were going to say you could have an autonomous AI that you can chat with.
Oh. Well, you can have that too.
Yeah. Would you like
saying,
trivia?
I'm trying to win over popular opinion.
I don't think
to speed up the pardon the pun the time it takes for Americans to embrace the idea of self-driving cars. How do you do that?
I don't think
we need a superstar racer. We need the Jeff Gordon of robots.
I don't think that a robot winning NASCAR is going to win over a lot of NASCAR fans.
I don't know, man.
I think that just getting your grandma in the car is going to do it. Get your grandma in a Google car. Grandma,
get your granny in a Google car.
Yeah.
Have you seen the picture of these cars?
No.
Oh, man, they look stupid. They look really bad, but I kind of love it.
Dude, if you want to win...
They're doing the smart car approach, where it's like so stupid that you have to be smart.
Well, I think what they should do if they want to win over the NASCAR crowd, just make them all Corvettes. It's just a Corvette that you have to have a robot drive.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of things you could do.
Yeah. I mean, I live in a town. Seattle is like Teslaville. Like, these things are going to be driving all over Seattle as soon as they're released.
Right.
Like, there are so many freaking Teslas in this city.
Yeah.
With Amazon and Microsoft, like, it's just like Teslaville.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm excited, dude. I can't wait. Like, the first time that I get to ride in a self-driving taxi, I'm going to be so freaking stoked.
Yeah, it's going to rule.
It's going to be awesome.
I'm all for it. Humans are super dangerous behind the wheel.
They're the worst.
It's been proven.
They're literally the worst drivers.
Cannot be trusted.
Humans are statistically the worst drivers.
Of all the animals that drive,
they are the worst.
Which is insane.
Yeah. Like, your dad sent you that...
There's less fatalities every year because of a Doberman pincher behind the wheel.
Yeah, your dad sent you that chain email with the dog and the steering wheel. That guy did better than you on his driving test.
It's true. He aced it.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his license. Both kinds.
Anyway. All right. Well, let's move on. But before we do, we want to tell you about the Bald Move Podcast Network. Guys, so much stuff going on right now. We just had the last final season, part one of Mad Men. Aaron and Gino are wrapping that up for you right now. But there are also, guys, there's so many freaking TV podcasts. We got Game of Thrones. We have, What is this? Bald Move TV podcast, Metalocalypse, the Doomstar Requiem, A Clock Opera is now up there on Bald.
Yeah, that's part of their crowdsourcing campaign.
Oh, awesome.
You could fund them to do a podcast on a different show, so they did a Metalocalypse one.
That's awesome.
Which is funny, because they are, as far as I know, not Metalocalypse guys. I could be wrong.
Well, they have two podcasts on it right now, so check that out. They also have 24, an unofficial podcast covering the new 24 season, the miniseries. Like I said, they got Fargo, they have Game of Thrones, and Mad Men is wrapping up. They're hitting on all cylinders, but we've also got the Because Show, we've got Up Yours Downstairs, and we're on there as well. Check out baldmove.com, guys, and you can click on the support button at the top of the page to find out how to support those dudes. Also, get in touch with us, personalarrogance@gmail.com if you want to send us an email or a bracket, 360-362-0024 to leave us a voicemail, at Personal Podcasts on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're at the Bald Move Facebook page. We are also on the Personal Arrogance Facebook page. And then you can also rate and review us on iTunes, guys. That helps us out a ton. If you haven't done that already, please take 3 minutes. Rate and review us on iTunes. It helps us out so much. It makes this Personal Arrogance Nation a little bit bigger. Also, if you are on a panel at a comic convention about podcasts, please mention us.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome, because that's called word of mouth. And if you can't do anything else, just word of mouth it. We really appreciate it all. But if you are on our Facebook page, guys, and this Facebook thing is blowing up, I predict that this Facebook thing will be very big in very soon.
They should buy some sort of, like, virtual reality headwear so you can do it all the time.
Man, don't get ahead of yourself. But we do.
I will do that in my Google car.
We do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, oh, you're driving to downtown. How about you're driving through the Sonoran Desert on
that
a horse?
That will be funny when people are in their autonomous cars playing Grand Theft Auto on their Oculus Rifts.
I love it. Anyway, each week we're on Facebook and we say, hey, we're recording. What do you want us to talk about? And you tell us and we talk about it. First of all, Rob Zip says, thanks for calling your listeners friends instead of fans. I was on a podcast panel and mentioned that sort of thing, and it got some other podcasters' panties in a jumble.
That's weird.
That is weird. You guys are our friends. I think one thing that we've tried to do since the beginning of the show is to make it your show as the right. listener. So you let us know what you want us to talk about. We talk about it. You call us. We put you on the podcast. This is your show, guys. You are our friends. And if you're in Seattle, give us a call and we'll hang out with you. That's it. That's the deal, bros. All right. Jason says, board games are always a welcome topic. I think we covered that. Jason says, I also heard that Wizards announced D&D 5 will be free to play levels 1 through 20.
Yeah, I don't get this.
Is that for reals? I thought that was a joke.
Oh, okay, it must be a joke.
Yeah, I think it's like a joke for like free-to-play RPGs.
Okay, gotcha.
It's also free-to-play if your friend buys the books.
It's also free-to-play if... Oh, I don't know.
Moving ahead. Jonathan says, what are your top three ninja movies of all time? Mine are number 3, Beverly Hills Ninja, number 2, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, original, and number 1, Three Ninjas.
I'm
gonna say Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
Yeah, that's kind of ninja-esque.
There is a ninja type of thing going on there.
I like the Ninjago series.
Well, there you go.
Just kidding, I don't.
Rolo's got some input here. He says, Thunder Ninja Kids, The Hunt for the Devil Boxer. It is a real show. And and also there's Solar Roadways, which would go great with your Google car.
I'm more of a samurai guy than a ninja guy, to be perfectly honest.
Absolutely. We'll get to that in a little later. That actually ties into a later Facebook roundup topic. Ollie says, Edgar Wright leaving Ant-Man. I think this is a good thing because I think he probably left for the right reasons. And that's a pun intended, I suppose. Edgar Wright is... Edgar Wright, I really liked the movie Scott Pilgrim, but... I like him. I want him to do original stuff. I like his original stuff. So if he doesn't end up doing one of the Star Wars original spinoffs, I would love to see him just see what he has to do next with Simon Pegg and make an awesome movie. Justin says, I want to know what you think about spaghetti westerns. This ties into the samurai thing. Do you find it interesting that some of the characters are the same in Fistful of Dollars, A Few Dollars More, and The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, even though the names are different? If you haven't, watch these films and tell us what you think. Clint Eastwood goes by Joe. Monco, Blondie, and more. What are they the same person? I think they're like the Stranger.
Well, yeah, he's the man with no name.
Exactly.
These are not names he's given himself. These mm-hmm. are names other people call him by.
Yeah, it's actually kind of similar to Fargo, I think. Yeah,
I people have seen Fargo. Love spaghetti westerns.
I know you
specifically,
do.
Specifically, Good, Bad, and the Ugly, and Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah.
Masterpieces.
Yeah, in fact, GBU is one of your favorite movies of all time, if I'm not mistaken.
It's in top five for sure, maybe top top three.
Pretty damn good stuff. We love spaghetti westerns. And they're also tied into the board game Bing. I'm trying to get this whole thing wrapped up in a single thing. Josh says, the wife and I saw X-Men for a biannual trip to the movie. $16 well spent as far as we're concerned. However, if you feel you need strict continuity in a movie about time-traveling mutants fighting genocidal robots, as many have complained about, don't see this movie. I'm excited about it. I haven't seen it yet, but Aaron liked it, and also I love time travel. It's probably my favorite device in fiction, so more of that. James says, well, you know, well, besides that, it's summer-ish. What are some summer beer recos? Obviously, Twilight from the aforementioned Deschutes.
I like Ninkasi Spring Rain.
Mm-hmm. There's also one that I really loved last year from Terminal Gravity. They're out of Oregon, and I'm trying to type it up right now because I can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember too. I cannot recall.
Yeah, I'll get back to it. But the Terminal Gravity summer seasonal, but Twilight Summer Ale, you can't go wrong with it.
No, that's always delicious.
Yeah, Matthew says, I've been listening for a few months now, and I've noticed multiple references to Akron, Ohio. I was wondering if you guys love or hate Akron. Or maybe I'm just noticing that because I'm an Akronite. Also, I'd like to hear Eric try to make another animal noise. I just was mentioning Akron. I don't know anything about the city, but I know that the University of Akron is the Zips, is their mascot. And
what?
They're the Zips, and their mascot is a kangaroo.
That's weird.
Which is cool.
Well, put a zipper on that pouch. I think Akron just comes up because it's one of those great city names.
Yeah.
Akron, Ohio. It's right. Like Walla Walla, Washington,
mm-hmm.
or Albuquerque. You know, it's just one of those great city names. Toledo is up there too.
Yeah, both in Ohio, but yeah, Akron,
Ohio has some strong names.
I mean, Akron. It lended itself so well to a Chronicon the Arcane, who is my evil sorcerer in my D&D campaign.
Right.
So. Weed Whackers, by the way, the name of the Thermal Gravity Summer Ale. Really good session ale at 4.6. It is a delicious, delicious beer.
No, it's great. It's check out the Sod Slayer from Rainy Days here in Silverdale, Washington. Limited distribution, but quite good.
Is that a real beer?
Yeah.
They probably tried to name it Weed Whacker, then it was already taken.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to ask Mike Monstoni.
Also an animal noise, Jesse. Give me an animal.
Narwhal? Pretty good.
Matthew says, I've been listening for a few months now, and I've noticed... Oh, that's the one I just read. Justin says, an Oktoberfest without beer, worse than a punch in the face? Obviously, yes.
I will easily take a punch in the face to be able to provide beer to a Oktoberfest.
Yes, and this is in Utah. Apparently, they're clamping down.
Shocking.
They're clamping down on single event liquor sales. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, in a country that's founded by Puritans, this is a state that's founded by Puritans. Double Puritan.
I'm not sure if they were the Puritans.
They're basically Puritans.
Okay. I just, historically speaking, I think there's a difference.
All right. Eric says, I'm not going to read that one. Sean says,
answer is Eric.
My wife does not want to move to Washington because she is deathly scared of an impending volcanic disaster. Please tell me what you know about this and if it's really something to be scared of.
I would be lying if I said it's not a risk factor for sure. Mount Rainier is the largest volcano in the lower 48.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an active volcano that is, as every geologist I've talked to is like, oh yeah, it's due.
It's past due, actually.
It's past due. Yeah. And like, I mean, 1980, you have Mount St. Helens. Yeah. Just don't live on Mount Rainier and you're probably fine.
Well, I mean, the other part about this is that there's geological evidence that the last time that Mount Rainier blew up, it pushed lahars that were, and a lahar is a giant mudslide, lahars that were like over 100 feet deep down the Puyallup Valley all the way to Seattle.
Nice.
So it's not going to empty, it's not going to hit like downtown Seattle or north. It's going to empty into Elliott Bay if it follows a traditional track. But basically, yeah, a 100-plus-foot mudslide is due to also ravage the entire Puyallup River Valley. So don't settle in Puyallup.
Yeah.
Also,
it's sure your wife is actually right.
But the other part about it is, like, they knew that Mount St. Helens was going to erupt. It had eruption. Like, it's not like an earthquake that happens randomly. Like, earthquake or volcanoes, you can kind of predict when they're about to happen, so they'd be able to evacuate you. So that's a plus side, I guess.
Have I talked on this podcast about the time I was observing Mount St. Helens while it was erupting?
Dude, you weren't even alive.
Not in 1980.
Uh huh.
This was when I was in community college. Because remember,
oh, it's steaming. It's venting.
Yeah, there's that period of little eruptions going on.
Yeah.
I was on a field trip to Mount St. Helens right when that started. And there was like all this activity and like everyone started running to the windows and there was like the plume coming up from there.
Yeah.
And we were on that ridge. I can't remember what it's called, but it's named after the guy that died there last time it blew.
Yeah, yeah. The one guy, there was one dude who died when Mount St. Helens blew up because he refused to leave his cabin.
Yeah. He was on that ridge, and like, so like, this was before like there was that much activity going on there.
Yeah,
and everybody's like, I got to see like an actual like plume of volcanic smoke come out of a volcano.
Everybody's like, cool. Guys, is this?
I was okay? Fine. I was like, oh, this is just kind of cool. Okay.
You're a child. You have no fear of death.
Well, anyway. I was in college.
But, you know, we got volcanoes, we got earthquakes.
But here, the funny thing about this story was that the bus driver was, like, freaking out. He, like, wanted everyone to get on the bus to get out of there. He was so freaking terrified. And everyone else was like, yeah, it's whatever, it's just doing his thing. But he was like, yeah, I want to go, we should go.
Okay. Love it. We got one more here. So what? We're like 2 months, Michael says, we're 2 months away from the Arrogant Move Fantasy Football League. You bet we are. That
you
will be
bet
happening
you guys are.
Once again, Jesse, fantasy football rules.
It's boring. I hate it. Right. I don't want to do it.
Fine. Aaron and I will just battle it out in the championship once more.
Go for it.
All right. Well, that's all of our feedback for this week. It's time for a recommendation. Jesse, what's your first reco?
I've recommended it before, I'm sure. Mystery Science Theater 3000, the episode Werewolf.
Do it.
The other night, I was staying up late. I was a little buzzed. I was like, I'm just going to throw this on and, like, I'll go to bed when I start getting bored. Watch the entire show. I was like, this rules. love this it. Show. This is so funny.
Awesome. My first record this week, I've been pouring through HBO Go and, Veep, dude. Veep is a great show. Stars Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
I gotta watch that.
It's pretty funny. It's not like the greatest show, but it is a great time passer. I enjoy it very much. Veep.
Right. So my second reco is like Dungeons and Dragons. Like I have here written D&D with like 12 Ds.
There you go.
I've been having so much fun with it.
I can't wait to play the next campaign, guys, and we might have a very interesting celebration for our 200th episode that might involve a little D&D, so stay tuned for that. And my second reco this week is going to be... Oh, I already did it. It's the Trees of Doom. God damn it. I wish the shoots would put this in the production. Dunkelweissens, guys. Dunkelweissens.
It's a cool style.
I love them.
I would definitely like more domestic craft breweries to do them because, honestly, I've gotten some bad like Optimators, and Celebrators. Mm-hmm. Just because you never know. Like you go to the Safeway, it could be sitting on the shelf for like 2+ months, just getting oxidized.
Right.
So definitely get the Deschutes one as you're suggesting.
Or if you're at a Prost here, it's German bar in Seattle. German bars usually have some kind of Dunkelweizen on tap. Great place to get them. So please, guys, Dunkelweizen. So that's called bookending. That's the end of the show. Jesse, thanks so much for talking to me again.
Thank you.
And listener, until next week, remember that wherever you go,
whatever you do,
please stay arrogant.
Boop, 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 boop.